Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. This is episode, ready for this, folks, 350. That's right, folks. 350 of them. 350 episodes of Earth Station 1. And I wish it was on a happier note we were celebrating the 350th episode, but we are here to talk all about the passing of Carrie Fisher. To a lot of people, a true icon, a true trendsetter for a generation of female characters in sci-fi. And not just sci-fi itself, but also a novelist, she was a writer. She was, she directed, she did Broadway, she did plays, she did it all. And we're going to talk all about that. And it's kind of really, took us all by surprise when they announced a couple of days ago that she had a heart attack on a transatlantic flight. And we were hoping she was going to be making a recovery, but I guess she just didn't pull out of it. But we'll talk all about that later in the show. But before that, we do have some really cool stuff to talk about, and we'll get to that in a moment. But I have to welcome my co-hosts for this week. Let's say hey to Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How are you this day, sir?
Well, this day is not the best day, but, it's better because we're here recording and sharing with each other. So it is indeed a dark time for the Rebellion. 2016 has struck again. It's only a week to go and it's still not done. But hopefully we can make it through unscathed. This one very, very personal for me. So I will let our listeners know in advance that I may get a little blubbery, but as we go on, stay with us. We'll get through it. We'll all get through it together.
Exactly. And it'll be interesting, but we like to consider ESO as your digital audio therapy couch.
Well, let's not look. I mean, A, if we did that, we'd be responsible for the results, and B, we'd have to charge a lot. So I don't know if we can. Shh.
You gave me ideas right there, Mike. Charging a lot. No, just kidding, folks. Just kidding. But we do got some really cool stuff to talk about first. First, we want to hear from you guys, of course, ESOpodcast@gmail.com, or call us at 404-963-9057. All right. We had some results, finally, of the who is going to be inducted in 2017 into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And joining us once again is Michelle Borg. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi. Thanks.
And you want to do the introductions for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and then we'll talk all about it.
Sure. We had a very large ballot this year, and fortunately it resulted in a slightly bigger class, and that class is made up of Journey, ELO, Yes, Pearl Jam, Joan Baez, Tupac Shakur, and the Award for Musical Excellence is being presented to Nile Rodgers.
That is a lot larger of a class than they had in the past, isn't it?
Well, typically it's been five, and this is six plus the musical excellence. So glad just to get that extra couple in there. Five a year is making it hard to get everybody in.
Mm-hmm. I think they were limiting themselves a lot.
Well, I think that they keep it down to, less than half a dozen because of the, obviously it's all based around the concert, right? So they can only really have realistically at like five or six acts perform that night. So you're probably never going to see like 10, right?
Probably not, but even
unless they make it an all-day festival.
Yeah.
And I see nothing wrong with that at all.
I don't either. For the HBO thing, there is such a thing as editing. So yeah, big, slightly bigger classes should be the order of the day. So we're very glad to see at least six come out of this ballot.
When we last talked to you, the fan ballot was going strong, and I don't think it's any shock to anybody who was following that Journey got in, because they were leading the fan vote big time, and obviously, the big question is, you know, is Steve Perry going to show up?
That's a very good question that nobody knows the answer to yet. Well, Journey has had some tensions, but it's not like at each other's throat, Deep Purple kind of tensions. Steve Perry is an eccentric guy, so if he doesn't show, I think it's more down to that than terrible fighting. The rest of the band has pretty much made it clear they are welcoming him back, and hopefully we will see that. He joined them for their Hollywood Walk of Fame star, so there's hope that he will come around to this sense of occasion and make an appearance.
My understanding, when he joined him for the star, though, he was not announced that he was going to be there. He just kind of showed up.
And plus, he
didn't perform with them then. So, I mean, obviously, everybody wants to see, you know, Steve Perry singing, you know, with Journey again. Just the question I have, and I don't want to linger on this too much longer, but can Steve sing? I know there's been some question as to whether or not he can really sing anymore. I understand he's been working on an album for a while, but does he still do performances? Can he still sing?
He performed, I honestly cannot remember the occasion off the top of my head, but I did catch something on YouTube. He came out and did a couple of numbers with another band. And as I recall, he sounded passable. He's not going to be able to do that middle section of Wheel in the Sky anymore.
No, of course, but he's a lot older anyway.
Yeah, he's a lot older. Exactly.
But here's actually, that brings up a good question, though. You know, when a band goes into the Hall of Fame, which members go in with them? Is it just current lineup?
No. The Hall, in their infinite wisdom, picks the lineup, and it's... Some people think they throw darts or spin a wheel, because it doesn't always make sense. Journey, they've pretty much got it right. The hit-making lineup from the Frontiers era, plus Greg Raleigh and the original drummer, Ansley Dunbar. They've got it pretty much right. When we get to ELO, there's a few questions about, who the Hall, picked for ELO. They have a track record. Yeah, they've got a track record for leaving some important people out, and people just, observers just don't know why.
Yeah, because look, it's a band like Yes, which had multiple lineups and were successful mm-hmm. with multiple lineups. Because you had, a different version of Yes from the 70s than you had from Yes mm-hmm. in the 1980s.
Yeah.
I do find it telling, though, that, on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, if you go to rockhall.com and look at the pictures of all the inductees, like, even though ELO is in as a group, the picture is just of Jeff Lynne. I don't know why they just didn't let him in. Like, just put Jeff Lynne.
I know with ELO, there's a lot of bad blood with a lot of the old members. Cause I know when we saw him back in September, it purposely said Jeff Lynne's ELO. Because after the band split, some of the original members excluded Jeff Lynne and came back as ELO too. And were trying to perform mm-hmm. all the songs from the originals and such, and it was nowhere near as successful.
I think there's some question as to whether the drummer Bev Bevan will be allowed by Jeff to perform. And to Bev's credit, he has been very gracious and classy. And I hope he is allowed to come out and perform.
So were there any surprises for you? Like I said, Journey was a no-brainer. I think last time we talked, we all kind of thought, you know, Pearl Jam, first time on the ballot, but they're still probably going to get in. The others, I think, were all questionable. Was there one in particular that stood out to you like, oh, I can't believe that they got in?
Nope. Actually, when I did my prediction blog post, maybe a week or so out, I predicted all of them.
Wow. That's
pretty good.
A lot of bloggers picked pretty much all of them. So it's a good class, but it was kind of a predictable class.
Gotcha.
In the end.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it definitely spread the diversity around, I've noticed. They got a lot of heat last year for having a lot of, rock, classic rock, white men in. So this year they've made sure that, Joan Baez is represented, Tupac Shakur is in. So they've got, some diversity there. And it's Nile Rodgers, of course.
It's cosmetically diverse. When you look at that on paper and you really think about it, and I'll cite my friends at Future Rock Legends, it's 25 middle-aged to senior citizen white men, one senior citizen woman, and two black men, one of which is no longer with us. So it's anything would be more diverse than last year's class. But you look at this and you say, oh, they've got a woman and they've got dance music with Nile Rodgers and hip hop with Tupac. But still, basically, most of this class would slide right neatly into a classic rock radio format.
See, I don't consider Pearl Jam classic rock. But I guess, they've been around now 25 years. So
we're just old.
And it is because, this first time I saw Pearl Jam was in a warehouse in Seattle before they had signed their first album deal.
Yeah. If 10 is in the classic section, yeah, you're old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. Damn it.
Yeah. We're getting old.
Yes.
Well, very cool. Is there anything else about these particular inductees that we should note before the big induction ceremony that takes place on April 7th?
Well, it'll be interesting to see if everybody from Yes comes together. John Anderson seems to think it will work out. He's a very positive kind of guy, and into the zen of the universe, so I hope he's right.
Well, the last time I saw them in concert, they actually had all the members who ever had been in Yes playing different songs from that era, and they even mixed them and everything. It was really cool.
When was that?
God, that was probably 10 years ago.
Okay, so.
Yeah. So it was cool, and it would be great to see if they would all agree to do that.
Hopefully they will.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Rick Wakeman was threatening to wash his hair on induction ceremony night, so we'll see. We'll see if he gets all decked out beforehand and manages to come.
Anybody who was either nominated or not nominated this year that you think should have definitely got in, or is just needs to get in at some point?
Oh, you're trying to lead me on, aren't you?
No. I just
Michelle, I knew where he was trying to go with that one.
Yes, I do too. As far as the Cars go, I will be philosophical about it this year. Next year, if this happens, I will be considerably less philosophical. It was a really, really strong ballot with everybody on there had an excellent case, and the ballot determines a lot. It's kind of like what they say about it. On any day, any baseball team can beat the other team. It just kind of is how the ballot falls. So,
so you're hoping next year will be Chic and the Cars. Is that what you're trying to say?
Chic.
Chic won't be on the ballot ever
again. Chic has probably, that's the thing about the Nile Rodgers. In the case of giving it to Ringo, it was very gracefully handled. Ringo did not go in on under the standard nomination process. He got the award for musical excellence. But it was very, very smoothly handled, so that a lot of attention wasn't called to that.
Well, plus he was a Beatle too. So he's the only Beatle not in individually. So it was kind of like, yeah, we should just give him. Yeah.
He kind of needed to be in there, and he's had the All-Star Band for years and he's made contributions, but when you put his recorded output up against, people he would have been on the ballot with and against the other Beatles, it probably would have fallen short. So to get him in this way and have Paul come and induct him, it worked really well. In Niall's case, it was kind of a mixed blessing for him. It was almost a consolation prize. And he's gone on record as saying, I kind of feel like they put me in the lifeboat and told me my family couldn't get in. So Chic and the memory of Bernard Edwards, it's doubtful that'll ever be resurrected. So not quite 100% the honor they would have liked for it to be. Kind of bittersweet for him.
As you mentioned before, last time you were on, they'd been on the ballot 11 times and didn't get in. So, I mean, that's a lot. That kind of tells you.
It didn't really do them any favors. They kept bringing them back year after year. They never took a break and took them off the ballot and reintroduced them, which has happened with some bands. They've gone off the ballot and come back on, and they just kept hammering on Chic, and it didn't work.
And whereas you could argue whether or not Chic should get in or not, I don't think anybody would argue that Nile Rodgers has a spot in there. I mean, the work that he's done as a producer alone is worthy of that. So, it all works out, I think. I think, if anything, if The Rock wants to give him something, let Chic perform with him at the ceremony and then boom, be done with it, But cool. Well, thank you. As always, we look forward to these reports. I understand that we may get more reports in 2017 from you regarding all sorts of rock and roll goodness. So that's a good thing to look forward to. But that's only if you can survive the geek seat.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. I thought you'd forget.
We had alternative motives for having you up on the show tonight. See, folks, we're just not one-track mind people in the show. We actually have alternative meanings. Okay, Michelle, it's your turn to take on the geek seat. Mr. Mike, tie Michelle. All right, Michelle, you ready for your first question in the geek seat?
Yeah.
What was your favorite geek out moment?
Probably the night that the stars aligned and I met one of my heroes in life, Dr. Brian May.
Oh, wow. You met Brian May?
I met Brian May.
Oh, that is awesome.
And they say you don't want to meet your heroes, but in his case, if you've ever seen an interview with him, that's what he's like. He's a wonderful, kind, just very decent human being, and it was a pleasure and an honor.
He's done
so. And I did geek out. I got kind of excited, and I hugged him. And it wasn't until I heard somebody behind me giggling that I realized I just sort of kind of bounced up and hugged him.
Oh.
So, yes. Subsequent meetings, like when I met Todd Rundgren, I held back and asked.
I'm sure Todd said yes.
Todd said yes.
Of course. What was your most disappointing geek out moment, though?
Meeting another huge hero of mine, Midge Ure from Ultravox. And it has nothing to do with him being rude in any way. It's just you kind of think, oh, you'll get that connection. It'll be just so special. And he was doing the meet and greet, and I don't know if he was just kind of tired or his personality just something he does on stage, and he's more reserved off stage, but it was didn't really get that chat going that I kind of hoped we'd get. And so it wasn't quite on the same level as Brian May, but he's still a huge hero of mine and still a wonderful person.
What geeks you out the most?
Oh, just finding goofy stuff behind the scenes. Like on, it was yesterday, I spent a goofy amount of time looking up a theater in Cleveland where part of a video was shot, and I found it and was very pleased with myself.
Oh, that's cool.
It was kind of a silly thing to do, but I did it.
What turned your geek off though?
Oh, snobism. And in my case, particularly, the rock police snobs. The kind of people who go to Chaka Khan's Facebook page, which she actually posts on herself, to tell her she doesn't belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Wow.
Yeah. Or the person that chimed in on the occasion of George Michael's passing and said, just because he sang with rock stars, he's merely pop and that is all. It's like, who asked you? So yeah, that's a huge turnoff for me.
I totally understand that. What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
This is a hard one. I came up with Dick Solomon from Third Rock from the Sun.
Oh, really?
What about me?
The same thing happened to me.
It would probably be the most bizarre, exasperating experience, but totally unique and maybe kind of fun. So, yeah, meet Dick Solomon.
No problem. I do understand that completely.
Fun at parties.
Oh, yes. That is an understatement. What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
Anybody from a Graham Greene novel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the sordid underbelly of life. Even the quote-unquote good characters are seamy and depressing.
No, I totally understand that. I totally understand that one. Okay, what is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
Demented and sad, but social.
Ooh, I like that.
From The Breakfast Club, one of my favorite movies.
Mm-hmm. I knew exactly when you said it. What is your ideal geek occupation?
Oh, I would love to be a music archivist.
Really?
Yeah. And there's places where there actually are such things. Middle Tennessee State has a place called the Center for Popular Music, and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has an academic library associated with it. I'd have a ball. I'd probably get fired though, because I'd probably be like at a table somewhere with a stack of books, just plowing through myself.
Mm-hmm. Not a problem. I do understand that. You probably would be like, I don't want to be bothered with my job. I don't care about it. It's music. What geek occupation would you not like to do?
Answering the phone at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Ooh. Ow. Okay.
Any blues aren't in? Yeah. Same to you, pal.
I think you'd be perfect for that role.
Again, I would get fired really quick.
What is your ultimate geek fantasy, Michelle?
Jazz hands. I would like to be in a musical. I did it once. despite a lack of singing ability, but.
Wow, really?
I would love to do it again.
Okay.
Alternately, my other Walter Mitty daydream is to win the gold medal in figure skating at the Olympics. But neither one of these things is going to happen.
Okay, that I see. So that's why they're fantasies.
Exactly.
Well, Michelle, guess what? You have made it through the Geek Seat. Congratulations. Yay! Mr. Michael Gordon, tell the young lady what she's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $20.17.
Yes.
Wow. We've dropped.
Woo! Well, it's only station money. You can't use it off the station. And really, there's not a lot to buy here.
Well, maybe we'll...
Can I go in the Zazzle store and get some of those shirts?
those old Bobby Nash shirts.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like, oh, Bobby Nash is back on the podcast again. Oh yeah, we never took those down. Oops.
We got such a surplus.
Mm-hmm, exactly. We need to sell them somehow cheap. Well, thank you, Michelle, and thank you for the reporting on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It was great talking to you about it.
Thanks for having me.
I know that you've got your blog. Tell everybody where that can check out your iconic rock blog.
iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com.
Of course, Mike let out of the bag earlier that Michelle is actually going to be joining us in 2017, and she's going to have a segment here on the podcast weekly talking all about music, and she's going to be talking about, you know, what's going on in the music industry, her views on, you know, books about music, or, you know, even movies, you know, anything to deal with the music industry, even concerts and such, festivals. She's going to be touching it all weekly, and, you know, it's going to be a nice addition to the station. We're very happy to have Michelle on board with us.
Absolutely.
So with that being said, we are going to take a quick break and we will be back, and we're going to be talking about the passing of Carrie Fisher.
The Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast delivers the latest sci-fi news plus movie and TV reviews with brilliant and insightful commentary. If you haven't listened to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast before, you will. Listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast now.
What, you think you're some kind of Jedi waving your hand around like that?
Watto, I'm telling everyone to listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast.
No, they won't.
Yes, they will, including you.
No, they won't. I'm a Tidarian. Mind tricks don't work on me. Only money.
Okay, I don't have money, but please listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. Sci-fi. From a certain point of view.
Hey everyone, welcome back. 2016 has struck again, and this time it struck very close to the geek community, and we lost a princess this time, and man, was it tough. Carrie Fisher passed away today, which is the 27th December. And man, we are struck with it. She was 60 years old, and this one's cutting close to the home and to the chest. It's, you know, she's been at Dragon Con a couple times. I've met her twice, and she is, you know, a true, you know, pioneer for, you know, her roles she's done. She is Princess Leia, and, you know, this is just amazing to see what happened. And, you know, guys, we got another one, and we have a great crew to talk all about it. We're joined, of course, by Darren this week.
Hi, everybody.
We got Jennifer Hartshorn joining us.
Hello.
And we are joined by a newbie on the show. Let's welcome James to the show.
Hello, everyone.
So let's just jump in, you know. What was your initial reaction? Because it came out a couple of days ago that she had a heart attack on an airplane coming back from London.
there's so much fake news going around right now, and so much, you know, so many misreported events and whatnot. The first thing that I thought was, well, this is not true. Last weekend, and I checked into it, and yes, in fact, she had a heart attack. But then there was a lot of conflicting information about, you know, what her status was. And then it looked like she was out of the woods. And so I felt like we kind of all went through that, you know, that mourning and that being terrified. And then, you know, it seemed like she was out of the woods. And then today we find out that no, she's actually passed away.
I figured once I heard about the heart attack and then the fact that she was stable, at first the heart attack news was frightening. We all were, you know, especially the way 2016's been, we were like, oh my God, she's doomed, right? And then once we found out that she was stable, thanks to tweets from her mother and some other folks close to her, that I figured, you know, if anybody out there was going to give the big fat finger to 2016 and say, you're not going to kill me, it was going to be Carrie Fisher. But unfortunately, it was too much for even her.
I really, when I started hearing the reports coming out, I something told me it was trickling out very slowly. There was a lot of conflicting reports. It wasn't coming out. It wasn't coming out solid, and something just told me that this is not good. I don't know why. I just had that. I hate to be the one to say that here, but I really felt like there was a kind of a dark cloud over all of this. And my wife called me today, and you know, that was the news. Yeah, you know, that's what she told me. Yeah, you know, that's the reason she called me. And that's you know, once again, that's one of the things with that trickle out and the conflicting stories. It just felt like this was inevitable. I hate it.
Mm-hmm. For me, it was the troubling part of all the news was that she was basically, you know, trapped on that plane for 15 minutes. I mean, there were doctors there, you know, on the plane, luckily, but to be that long without equipment nearby that can handle a heart attack, that's a dangerous situation. And then when they said that she had stabilized, that doesn't mean improving.
Right.
And I was concerned because like, oh, she probably didn't get a lot of oxygen. No fault to anyone there on the scene, just the reality of it. Doing CPR on someone for 5 minutes can exhaust you. 10 minutes, 15 minutes is really exhausting. It just felt like, okay, we'll either hear something really good or really bad really soon. Is how I felt. And of course, there's obviously a lot of this stuff we're speculating about, and we don't know what the family knew. But I have to say, you know, our hearts go out to Carrie's family, obviously, and all the Star Wars actors and people who knew her way better than we ever did.
Oh, very much so. One of the things, and I don't know if it was a fake newscast or it was just what happened. Some people have speculated that maybe she did pass away like 2 days ago, but they didn't want to ruin people's holiday.
I don't believe that.
Because with speculations and, you know, because it has happened that people have died earlier, but the publicist doesn't come out with the information for a couple of days to respect the families. Yeah,
but she was on a plane. People knew. So, I mean, that would be hard to keep under wraps, I think.
Yeah, I think they might have tried to give her. My thing is that they probably tried to give her every fighting chance, you know, and that just took a while. And when all chances were exhausted, you know, I mean, she passed. And you know, I mean, we don't know the particulars, and that's for the family. And as you guys mentioned, I mean, my heart goes out for him, especially, you know, I mean, Debbie Reynolds. Like she hasn't been through enough in her entire life, but to lose a daughter is just at any time is tragic. And of course, you know, her daughter Billy and even her companion Gary, I feel sorry for. I keep seeing the tweets from I don't know who's still operating Gary the Fisher's Twitter account, but he's been tweeting like the last few days. And
Gary as in her dog, right?
Gary Fisher has a Twitter account, And he's been tweeting, I'm waiting for you, mommy, come home, mommy, that kind of thing. And it's been really like kind of hard to look at. And, obviously I'm not too concerned. I know the dog's going to end up somewhere, you know, much love, but, it's still just kind of hard, for all that. It just breaks my heart.
Mm-hmm. And on a side note, to see how social media has, especially the 2016, has been grasping with all of this tragedy, and especially with the election, and you know, we have a president-elect who tweets, and all this conflicting information that flows around, and all this fake news, and it makes it very hard, especially for the fans, to really kind of sift through it. And to, you know, I remember when Kurt Cobain died, it was like one solid story. That was it. And everybody knew what happened. Everybody knew what was going on. Of course, it was conflicted on how he passed away. But even a situation like this, it just seems like it's so convoluted and you couldn't get to the facts. And this is something that I think, you know, people really need to look at moving forward with this. You know, so that way, the fans can sort of have that moment.
But the thing is, do we need all the facts as fans?
No. We just need to know what happened. I mean,
yeah,
the general story, not the details.
Exactly. You know, that's the problem with media today, is they're trying to get too much, and what they don't know, they're fictionalizing a lot of it.
Yeah.
Or speculating. Mm-hmm. And
speculating. Yeah.
Exactly. And you do not need to know all about that. You know, let the family respect them. You know, they need some privacy. In a lot of ways. And someone, you know, yeah, Carrie Fisher meant a lot to a lot of people out there because of the characters she played, especially Leia. And she was just, you know, she was, you know, a role model for a lot of girls out there. And, you know, women out there in our generation, she was a tough ass character. She wasn't just a screaming ninny like you had on.
Yeah, If I can just speak to that, being the woman here, yeah, absolutely. You know, she, you know, was coming into a genre that was and still is to a large extent male dominated, and rather than, you know, she was the princess, which, you know, automatically makes you think, well, she's going to be the one that's getting rescued, and, you know, she's not going to be able to fight and everything. And right from the first movie, she was out there with a blaster, and she was kicking ass, and she wasn't just someone that needed to be rescued. And, you know, as we go through the films, she ends up being incredibly strong. And one of my favorite Leia moments is in Return of the Jedi, when she goes in and she rescues Han, you know, and the whole I'm holding a thermal detonator thing. I just loved that to bits. And it was an action hero princess. It was the idea that you can be a princess, because of course every little girl, or not every little girl, but many little girls grow up wanting to be a quote unquote princess. But you can be a princess, but also be a crack shot with a blaster and be smart and be a wise ass, but also be classy. And so she gave, I think, especially for women in the geek community, she was the first person who was like us, who was a woman in a group of guys holding her own and kicking ass. And she was so important to all of us. And yeah, she, you know, yeah, at the same time you had, you know, people like Ripley around the same time in Aliens, but that wasn't, you know, that wasn't a movie that we were seeing as kids, you know? You know, it's
Go ahead.
As we got older, you know, there was Ripley and there was Buffy and there were all of these other strong female role models, but she was the first. And it means a tremendous amount, I know, for women in the geek community especially.
Oh, very much so.
Well, remember,
in that first Star Wars movie, I mean, what we know as the first Star Wars movie, right?
Right.
She is really like the only woman in that movie. Like there's a handful of others that other than Aunt Beru, I can't think of another one. Like there's just with a speaking role. That's it.
Yeah.
Well, exactly.
And then and she also talks about, I just finished reading her latest book last night, which is
Princess Diaries.
Yes. The Princess Diarist. Yeah. And it's weird for me. It's just like, I just finished reading the book and then the next day she's gone and it's so weird. But in the book, I mean, she talks about that and she talks about how difficult it was, not just being the only female character, but being the only female pretty much on set and throughout like in like that area. I mean, it was very difficult for her. Very surreal.
Well, I mean, look at her as a young actress. I mean, 19 years old, going up against Peter Cushing,
yeah.
You know, and those are scenes. And you talk about the rescue, and I know it's all scripted, but, you know, for her to deliver those lines, this is some rescue. You came in, didn't you have a plan of getting out, you know, and pretty much Han Solo and Luke Skywalker look like bumbling idiots at that point, you know?
Yeah.
And she just to see a 19-year-old taking on this role, and I can't think of an actress today that could do that.
Mm-hmm. And it was her character won me over big time in the first Star Wars movie, which were, you know, New Hope to the new young kids out there. basically, when she was in, you know, she went toe to toe already with Tarkin. She went already toe to toe with Darth Vader. But the best line for me and totally won me over is when she saw the Millennium Falcon for the first time. She said, "You came in that ship. You're braver than I thought." And it was just like, that was like, and that was something you would think coming from a guy, not from the princess. And that was, that was what's great about it. She was one of the leads. She kicked butt more than Luke did in that first part of the movie in a lot of ways.
Oh, totally. And getting back to the point about the other female characters at the time, and you can look at Ripley and Sarah Connor, who we think of as strong sci-fi women now, but back in their first films, they really weren't. You know, they were Ripley was having to, you know, hide from an alien for about 85 minutes of that movie. and then poor Sarah Connor was running for her life through most of her movie. So Leia, we got, you know, she didn't have to take that journey from being damsel in distress to, okay, no one's going to rescue me, I need to do it myself. She was already like in the war, you know, she was already tough. So just to have that kind of a character on screen, the only other character we had who was remotely like that, I'd have to go to Uhura, and she didn't really get to do a lot in the movies.
Right. Yeah. She's been brought up today as well, but you know, she was kind of a switchboard operator. I mean, yes, it was good.
Yeah,
exactly. Yep. It was good to have some representation, but she wasn't out there with a blaster. You didn't see Uhura on a whole lot of away team missions.
You didn't see Uhura talking back to Kirk like, "No, I don't think I'm doing that."
Right.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like a smart move. We should do this instead.
Of course, now Uhura's totally different. So, you know.
Yeah.
Well, look at the scene in Empire Strikes Back when she's talking, you know, on Hoth, you know, before the battle, you know, on Hoth, and she's telling, I mean, I can't say the lines, but when she's telling everybody what to do and the transports are leaving and everything, and she's got that group of people. I love, there was an interview with Carrie Fisher where she said she didn't know what she was saying, but it's so convincing when she's saying it. That's where I go back to.
Yeah.
You have the scripted character, but then you have the person delivering the lines, and I can't think of another actress that would be able to pull that off like she did at the age she was. It's tremendous.
And the fact that she had so limited experience. I mean, she had only done, prior to Star Wars, she had done two films, I think, and barely had a speaking part in either one. She had studied in England at an acting college, but nothing really of note. She dropped out of that as soon as she got the part for Leia. Now she was no stranger to show business, obviously, thanks to her parents and growing up that way. But as far as acting, it wasn't anything she even thought she wanted to do. She just kind of sidestepped into it.
So a couple things. I want to talk about her writing in a minute, but since we were talking about, you know, how young she was and being the only woman on set, I don't know if you guys have seen this going around today, but there's in her memoir Wishful Drinking, she was talking about her experience on set, and I'm going to quote from some of this. She said, "George comes up to me the first day of filming and he takes one look at the dress," meaning the white dress, "and says, mm-hmm. you can't wear a bra under that dress." Yep. She says, okay, I'll bite. Why? And he says, "Because there's no underwear in space." And he goes on to say, "What happens when you go to space and you become weightless? So far, so good, right? But then your body expands, but your bra doesn't. So you get strangled by your own bra." And her comment on this was, "Now I think this would make a fantastic obit. So I tell my younger friends that no matter how I go, I want it reported that I drowned in moonlight, strangled by my own bra."
Oh, sweet.
That's great.
And that's where we go to the third movie, which a lot of people think that the Leia character was underwritten in that movie. But to me, you know, the moment she has here, she is the slave Leia. You know, it's like Lucas has taken this character and suddenly put her in this bikini, but she's the one that kills Jabba the Hutt. Mm-hmm. And does it so ferociously. I mean, she doesn't blink an eye. She jumps up and wraps that chain around his neck and kills him.
This princess will cut you. This is not.
Yeah. Obviously, the third movie gives us the first movie gave us the iconic hairstyle for her, and then the third mm-hmm. movie gives us the iconic outfit, right? I do want to talk about the third movie, but in the second movie, one thing I think that a lot of people don't realize is that the transition that she made from actress to screenwriter mm-hmm. was evident in the second movie, because in the second movie and some people have been releasing some of this stuff today, which has been really nice, but you can see there are images out there of screenplays, shots of dialogue where she would have to say something, or Han, scenes with her and Han, that kind of thing, that she corrected, or she sort of added some dialogue to and took out some other stuff, changed some stuff that George had done. And it's in the movie, the stuff that she had the ideas that she had were actually implemented and made, were actually filmed and put in the movie as opposed to George's original stuff. And I think that kind of continued on. So most of the scenes that we have with her in the second movie, most of the lines, I think a lot of them can be attributed to her. And that goes into, I think, even the third movie as well.
Yeah, she's, you know, obviously we mainly know her as Princess Leia. But I did not know until today how extensive of a script doctor she was.
Absolutely.
You know, as in, you know, somebody who goes in and doesn't actually get credited, but goes in mm-hmm. and cleans up the dialogue. And some of the things that she worked on, Sister Act, The Wedding Singer, Hook, Lethal Weapon 3, Made in America, Last Action Hero, So I Married an Axe Murderer. I mean, it just, it goes on and on. Mm-hmm. And to think that, you know, that's something that, that most of us don't really associate with her, but she was an amazing writer in addition to being this iconic character.
Well, she's an extremely funny lady.
She did
extremely funny.
She did also work on the prequels too. She had a pass at them. Not that that's in her favor necessarily, but yeah, she did. Cause George, after her ideas on Empire, I mean, George looked to her all the time.
I can only imagine what the prequels would have sounded like dialogue-wise.
Yeah.
Well, it's a scary thing.
Even worse, right? Yeah. I think, and that's the other thing, too. I think, you know, to her credit, too, well, I mean, yeah, not to be a pun phrase there, but she didn't get credit for a lot of that stuff. I mean, she mm-hmm. just did it because she enjoyed doing it. And of course, she got paid.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
She's credited, officially credited, for very few screenplays,
mm-hmm.
But she's worked on a ton of them.
but she did write a few books also.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The, yeah, we should talk about her writing after we talk about, Return of the Jedi, actually, because I think, because that happened, after that, right?
Sure. Yeah. But there's other movies she did also we should talk about, mm-hmm. too.
Oh, an excellent, excellent, excellent movie.
Blues Brothers!
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, but let's talk about Return of the Jedi first.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll get to Blues Brothers.
Well, there's the, you know, she didn't want to wear, obviously she didn't want to wear the bikini, that because she had to lose massive amounts of weight for the bikini. And but she did. She, you know, she knows where the paycheck's coming from. And she said that the only, you know, the thing that made it worth it for her was the fact that she got to the kill the slug at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
But, apart from that, I know that, the only other thing that I know about, the bikini really, that she enjoyed was that, when later on, when she was doing the convention circuit, she enjoyed seeing large men dressed up in the bikini.
Uh-huh. Yep. A lesson to men everywhere. Do not put a woman in a metal bikini. They will choke the life out of you.
Mm-hmm. So, yes.
Now, I did not know this. We talked about Blues Brothers, and I know we were going to get to that in a second, but I completely had forgotten that she was in Under the Rainbow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Totally slipped my mind.
No, that, believe me, I'm not going to make any bones about it. I was in love with Carrie Fisher, and I still am, actually, in a lot of ways. First, obviously, there was the physical attraction and watching her in the Star Wars movies, as well as Shampoo and mm-hmm. Under the Rainbow, where she's, you know, undressed. She's never done anything completely nude, but you know, she's been in underwear a lot. And Under the Rainbow, she's in her underwear. And then, so I definitely remember her from that.
We can't forget that she also wrote the book that became Terms of Endearment, which was basically her relationship with her mother.
Postcards from the Edge.
I'm getting that one confused with another one. I'm sorry. Postcards from the Edge.
No, they're both, you know, contentious mother-daughter relationships.
There you go. See, I knew I was mixing it up for a reason, Jennifer. Thank you.
But, you know, despite the fact that, you know, she had the success with the Star Wars movies, as did the other two men. And mm-hmm. they, you know, Harrison went on to have the superstar career that everybody, you know, pretty much knew he would have as soon as he was in, really, American Graffiti. But, Carrie was one of those ones that obviously, I mean, she did what she could, but. You know, she did a few movies, but mostly she was in co-starring roles or bit parts after the Star Wars mm-hmm. movies. There's very few times other than Under the Rainbow. And I think there's a couple of others where she was, the lead, the female, the romantic lead, but obviously she wasn't their typical Hollywood, what Hollywood wanted from a female lead. So she didn't get a lot of those parts. Mm-hmm. So she was relegated to a lot of, you know, just bit parts here and there. And I think, you know, that she, I think that's why she didn't really pursue it. I don't think it was one of those things that kept her interest because of that.
Mm-mm. But she did finally. To me, one of my favorite movies, and she hit its stride so funny in it, When Harry Met Sally.
Oh, yeah.
Her and Bruno, absolutely. Her and Bruno Kirby, another one we love. Mm-hmm.
Oh, they were so funny together. It was like oil and water.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, and then they, you know, and that was so fun about it, that, you know, her role in that. And then I think the last thing I remember seeing her in recently was the Jay and Silent Bob movie. When she played the nun, I think was the last role I remember seeing her in.
Besides Force Awakens.
Well, yeah. I'm not counting non-Star Wars.
I may be reaching here, but I don't know if you heard about the Map of the Stars movie, David Cronenberg, where she plays herself in that movie. It's not a very flattering role, but she's in a David Cronenberg movie. She does play a pivotal role. She plays herself, and she recommends the actress to hire the Julia Moore to hire Mia Wasikowska, I think it is. It's a horrible movie, but you know it's worth checking out for her.
Well, proof her once again that she's fearless.
Yeah, true. I remember her on Soap Dish. She had a bit part in that one. Mm-hmm. It was pretty funny. Pretty yes. funny.
But you've got a female actress, though, just talking about her acting, and I've cheated a little bit looking at her IMDb. I mean, she's worked with Woody Allen as a director, David Cronenberg, Wes Craven. You know, she's worked for, you know, Kevin Smith. I mean, you know, this is George Lucas. This is a woman that has really, you know, done a lot in her career, even though it's not as iconic as her Leia role.
No, just her work as an actress is still pretty, you know, consistent. Certainly more consistent than a lot of folks you could think of. And I think I've heard that she's really good, that she had a really good part in an episode. I think it's of 30 Rock. Is that correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
I've heard a lot of people talk about that, and reference that today.
I think that it's awesome that she got to work on 30 Rock because, you know, she was so funny, and for her to work with Tina Fey, you know, just as another sort of like passing the torch kind of thing, I think is really awesome.
That does seem like a great match.
And as far as, you know, somebody mentioned, Force Awakens, and I wrote a little sort of mini eulogy on Facebook today, and
very well written, by the way.
Thank you very much.
It really did bring me to tears.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. But one of the things that I mentioned in there is I said, I'm so glad we got to see you on screen one more time as General Organa. Strong geek ladies don't have to fade away just because they don't look good in a gold bikini anymore. And for me, that was, again, to have her there in that first movie as a role model to me as a kid and as a girl in the geek community, and then to see her again in Force Awakens, still there, still kicking ass, still being a leader, and she looked like a middle-aged woman. You know, she didn't, mm-hmm. she wasn't, you know, she wasn't going to be fitting into that gold bikini anymore, but she didn't belong any less just because she didn't have the figure of a 19-year-old, which I thought was awesome.
Now, the only thing that I thought was wrong with that scene was that she wasn't out first.
Yep.
I can only imagine, you know, like, you know, screw protocol, like she's going mm-hmm. out first.
Yep.
But and I think one of the issues that I had with Force Awakens a year ago, and it's hard to believe mm-hmm. that it was just a year ago, that was that she wasn't in it more, that, you know, the three great characters that we got mm-hmm. to know in the first Star Wars movie didn't interact at all or barely, and mm-hmm. that was frustrating. I mean, it was so nice to see them period, but it would have right. been even nicer if we had gotten more interaction. So
mm-hmm. well, one thing they don't make very clear, and we could spend forever talking about Force Awakens, but is that where did she go after discovering that she, you know, was the son of Anakin Skywalker and brother of Luke, and, you know, because she has the Force, you know, within her. And of course she Force senses, you know, the death of Han Solo, but they really don't go into any depth about, you know, does she pursue it herself or how I know the new movie's going to be coming out in 2017. So, you know, maybe they'll answer those questions.
I think there's plenty of room for many, many novelizations and things right. like that in the years to come. I mean, I think that much, you know, we're a bunch of us are Doctor Who fans as well here. And, you know, uh-oh. I'm just saying that, yeah, I think that, you know, just like on the one hand, we all wanted the 50th of Doctor Who to, you know, pay homage to the stuff of the past, but we had to go with the new stuff. We had to, you know, and Force Awakens was about a whole new set of characters. And yes, I would have loved to have known more about what happened in the intervening years to the three leads from the other one, but this wasn't their story anymore. This was this was passing it on to a new generation. And like I said, agreed, there's, you know, plenty of room for fanfic.
I do. It has been, and, you know, take this with a grain of salt because it's online, but online news. But it's been reported that everything that needed to be filmed with her has been shot and done. So for the next Star Wars movie. So a year from now, we shall have seen her. Our last performance, I guess. And that's going to be really eerie. I have, you know, I'm curious to see, you know, if the filmmakers, how much they wanted to use her going forward and if they're going to have to make some sort of, you know,
don't say CGI. Just don't even.
Well, I mean, look, it's been precedented this month with her.
I know. And it was the worst uncanny valley I've ever seen, but.
And the Fast and Furious movie, it was just so bizarre, so weird. It just didn't fit. And I'm not a big fan of it.
No, it's going to be interesting how much of the story they're going to have to rewrite, especially for episode 9, if she played a pivotal role or if she got killed off and episode 8, or, you know, just seeing her name for Carrie, you know, in, at the beginning of the movie or at the end, you know, where they just, you know, have it in the credits or such. That's going to be like tears everywhere.
Oh yeah.
I mean, oh man. I mean, I felt a punch at the end of this last Star Trek movie with, the tribute to
Leonard Nimoy,
for Leonard Nimoy and Tom.
Right.
And now, you know, at least we, you know, with the next one, we're going to have both Kenny Baker and Carrie Fisher absent. I mean, that's, and God knows, I mean, you know, I mean, what could happen between now and then as well. So it's one of those things, but you know what? I'm curious, obviously, to see what they're going to do and how that's going to work out. So, I think we've pretty much covered most of her acting performances. And I do, as we've kind of stumbled around here, want to mention her writing, because to me that really was like the other shoe dropping for me. Cause as far as, I mean, I fell in love with her physically in some ways, when I was a kid in a lot of ways, but really, you know, I saw the movie in 1977, that was Star Wars. In 1987, she drops her first novel, and like 10 years from the first movie, she drops her novel. And I read that, and Postcards from the Edge, it was eye-opening. I mean, just, it's definitely in terms of my development, one of my, like top reads ever, just because it was so, influential to me. It opened my mind up to a lot of ways that writing could be, because her style was so different than anything that I had been reading at the time. It felt so casual, and yet it was fiction. And even though it was very close to fact on a lot of ways, I mean, it was definitely very, very parallel to her own relationship with her mother and her own experience with drug use, and other issues, it still was fiction. And, I was blown away by it. And, to this day, I just read her last novel, and her style is just still, on point as far as being so fearless and yet so casual. And it comes across as so smooth. When I did get a chance to meet her at Dragon Con, it's obviously when you do those things, it's really brief. So I just said that I really admired her writing style, and that, again, it just seems so casual and so smooth and simple, right? So, and she She looked at me, and I didn't realize at the time, right there, because I was so nervous I was meeting her. But she actually, and I don't even know if she realized it, but she, of course she did. She quoted Han Solo, and she said, well, that's the real trick, isn't it? And with a smile on her face. And it kind of like, and I didn't realize until much later that it was that she was quoting Han Solo. And I, like I said, it was almost perfect. But, and that's what I think she brought to the table, like writing wise. And it's not no surprise that she was so successful with that. And her books were bestsellers because she, you could read those books and not be, you knew that she was going to be telling you her truth. It might not have been the truth, but it was the truth that she saw it, and it was going to be in an entertaining and clever way.
Well, there were a lot of novels. I mean, especially with what's his name? Correct me if I'm can't get his name right. That wrote.
Oh, Bret Easton Ellis.
Bret Easton Ellis, yeah. When you know, Less Than Zero and American right. Psycho was coming out during that time, yep. and Prozac Nation was around that time. I mean, there was a lot of great books that she had just placed. Postcards from the Edge in the middle of, and yeah.
Oh yeah. I read Bright Lights, too, Big City was another one of those. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Just really, seething books. And I don't think the movie did it justice. I mean, no. I think it's a really good movie, but it didn't do it justice at all. I feel like.
Yeah. Cause there's a darkness to it that I don't think any movie, well, it would have taken a different director to kind of be able to portray that.
Okay, so one other thing that I want to definitely mention is the fact that she was a very strong advocate for people dealing with mental illness and substance mm-hmm. abuse, because those are two things that she wrestled with all of her life, and especially, I mean, personally, from my point of view, the mental illness thing is certainly a major thing for me, because she was bipolar and she was absolutely open about it, and she wanted to get rid of the stigma that it carries. And I think that she had a number of things that she said that really resonated with me. One of the things that was quoted in a tweet here, at times being bipolar can be an all-consuming challenge requiring a lot of stamina and even more courage. So if you're living with this illness and functioning at all, it's something to be proud of, not ashamed of. And as somebody who has bipolar disorder, that it's just so inspirational when you hear someone who has been there, who has been through it, and who is surviving, and who is, you know, speaking up for people in public. I think that she was just so brave and so wonderful for doing that.
Well, wasn't it, she overdosed in 80? What was it? Around 85, I think that's what that mm-hmm. turned her on to doing Postcards from the Edge, writing mm-hmm. that. Based on that, and I think that's when it turned her around, because I mean. They did talk. She does talk about the heavy drug use, you know, during mm-hmm. Empire, especially.
Yeah, she was cast in Clue as Miss Scarlet, and it got past all of the heads of the studio until the insurance folks realized that she was in rehab.
Mm.
And they nixed that, and that's how we got Leslie Ann Warren as Miss Scarlet in Clue. So she wanted to work, but she knew she also had to battle some demons too. So. It's kind of empowering to see someone who has gone through the dark places, you know, and come out the other side much better for it, at least I think.
And this is kind of a side note, and my wife loves Turner Classic Movies, and it was Robert Osborne, and I used to love catching her, you know, on there with him, and she, very insightful person, and you know, some of those people that could be on that show can be sort of a wooden, but she really came across and knows her stuff and knows her history. And yeah, I think we've definitely lost an icon.
Mm-hmm.
Most definitely.
I mean, her stepmom was Elizabeth Taylor. Because her dad remarried after Debbie Reynolds. So.
That's and very true.
Paul Simon. I mean, let's go figure that out.
mm-hmm.
And that's one thing I wanted to say, you know, about, you know, this year, we have lost a lot of icons. I think that's the reason why there's so much traffic on the internet about it. People that really stood above, you know, it wasn't just a celebrity or a singer. And it's been a really bad year for that.
Yeah, there might have been other years where, quote unquote, just as many celebrities mm-hmm. of, or names have died of note. Mm-hmm. But I think if you look pound for pound at the status or the mark that some of these people left, like Carrie Fisher, you'll be hard pressed to find people who were that even close to what she did.
It, and it's also, you know, the age that we're at. You know, we're the people that we grew up with, David Bowie and Carrie Fisher and, you know, so many of the other people this year, you know, our childhood heroes are getting into their 60s and mm-hmm. above. So for us, one of the, you know, first real internet generations to start seeing this happen, of course, it's going to be all over social media. And we're all going to be talking about it because we're the first generation to lose these people that were so key to our childhood, I think.
The thing is, and not to be Debbie Downer here, but, you know, it's 2017 and further is not going to get much better with
this. Oh, I know. Yeah.
No, it's not. Yeah. People keep blaming the year. Beginning. And it's
exactly.
Like, no.
People are going, 2016, stop it already. You know, mm-hmm. I've been guilty of that. But in all truth, you know, it's people are getting older and our mm-hmm. people we grew up with are getting up there in age.
I mean, the scary thing is that, you know, when you look at that original 1977 Star Wars movie, Carrie Fisher's the youngest cast member there. And she's one of the first major players to go. I mean, so they're all the rest of them are still around. And, you know, I mean, I hope that they live long and healthy lives.
Exactly.
Somebody put a warding glyph up around James Earl Jones.
Ooh.
And prevent Harrison Ford from ever flying a plane again.
Right.
I mean, I know he's not going to make any movie appearances, but, you know, still.
No, I know.
Dream sequences and all that.
if things on the set, you know, don't kill him, if he still acts, you know. I don't know Seriously? If he's still acting, though. But.
Well, yeah, Blade Runner.
Yeah, that's later, true. Yeah. That's true. We do have that to look forward to next year. Yeah, mm-hmm.
right. Indy yeah. 5.
Yeah, well.
Well, there was an interview with Carrie Fisher a long time ago where she held her little figure, the one of the original figures, and she says, "I don't see this as me. I see this is Princess Leia. This is not mm-hmm. me, you know, on the thing." And yeah, that does kind of get into that, you know, we talked about the CGI and the Uncanny Valley and everything. Now we're going to see all this merchandise with our face all over it. And, oh, yeah. you know, that is something that Generation X and a little bit younger have to kind of deal with, you know, right now and say, hey, you know, it's new age now.
Carrie roasted George Lucas at an AFI banquet, and she wanted to thank him for making her pay him $2 every year to look at herself in the mirror. Since, you know, he owns her likeness in all forms and things like that. So.
Yeah. And, you know, I hope they do wrap it up in the next movie because any trickery I think is really going to send the fans over the edge. I think that people don't have the stomach for it anymore. I don't have the stomach for Peter Cushing, one of my favorite all-time actors of all time, Hammer Horror, everything, and I just didn't like that. I thought that was disrespectful, but that's me. So I think once you're gone, you're gone. That's all there is to it. No trickery.
Nope, agree with all that. Well, we want to hear from you guys at home. You know, please feel free, write us or call us and, you know, let us know what you guys feeling with this death. You know, how did it hit you? You know, we've talked about it and we just scratched the surface with a lot of it because, you know, there's only so much we could talk about in, you know, just about an hour. So, you know, please, you know, feel free to write us esopodcast@gmail.com. Call us at 404-963-9057. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment with Angela's Geek Girls Take.
welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this geek girl is talking about her favorite geeky winter holiday songs. Who doesn't want some songs from a galaxy far, far away to get you in the holiday spirit? Especially since where I'm at, where it's super hot and there's no snow, so you need something. Now, there is a long list of songs that I could give you, but since I don't have a lot of time, I'll give you a few that you can look up and enjoy. Most of these you can find on YouTube, but always, if you like them, support the artists and buy their album. First off, we have The Night Santa Went Crazy by Weird Al, which Weird Al has a couple different Christmas-themed songs, and really anything by him is hilarious. So if you haven't heard of Weird Al yet, maybe you should look him up. I'm kind of worried about where you've been for the last few years. What Can You Get a Wookiee for Christmas When He Already Owns a Comb is another really, really funny one. And there are some great versions of the song, too, from the one on the original Star Wars Christmas album to the Voice Plays a cappella cover. And really any of the songs from the Star Wars Christmas album, because it's really fun and kind of cheesy at times, which fits with that whole holiday spirit thing. I'm Going to Spend My Christmas with the Dalek by the Go-Go's is a great Doctor Who Christmas song, and also quite terrifying to hear Daleks talking about Christmas and stuff, so yeah. The Double Clicks Christmas album, Christmas Ain't About Me, has their really, really fun Hobbit holiday song on it called The Greatest Gift of All, along with three or four other songs as well. And also, if you haven't heard of the Double Clicks, look them up on YouTube. I got to see them at Dragon Con this past year, and they are awesome. Jingle Man and Christmas Boy by Stephen Colbert is another really, really funny one. And it's just a great Christmas song. It's just listen to it. It's fantastic. Lean Christmas by Devo Spice is another fun one, which if you haven't heard of Devo Spice, he is a geekcore musician, which he does a lot of geeky songs as raps. He actually has an album that is nothing but Doctor Who songs, and each song is a different doctor. I actually got to be in the music video for his second Doctor song as Zoe. Jingle Spells Volume 2 has a ton of great Harry Potter holiday songs by different artists on it. And I believe this album, the proceeds from the sales of this album go to a specific charity, so I would check that one out too. Now, there are a ton more geeky Christmas songs out there, and I have left some off of this list, but I hope you have fun checking these out and making your holiday season a bit more geeky. I'll be back next week on ESO with another episode. What will it be about? Well, you'll have to listen to find out. Have a great holiday season, guys. Bye.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the ESO podcast. Thank you, everybody who, you know, sent us, you know, emails and, you know, wrote us about everything going on with Carrie Fisher. And, you know, please, you know, don't stop. You know, we'll talk about it for the next few weeks. You know, any of your memories, we'll play any recordings up on the air, you know, whatever you guys want. Of course, you can find us at, you know, as we said, keep on saying ESOpodcast@gmail.com, or you can call us at 404-963-9057. Definitely, you know, keep in touch with us, and, you know, what we'll play, you know, whatever we need to, and we'll help support you guys. But speaking of emails, we did actually receive another email from our friend Jay Scherer. Wrote us from out in California, and he said, "Hey guys, thanks for keeping me company on my 1.5 hour trip to Los Angeles, and really enjoyed everybody's thoughts on Rogue One," talking about Star Wars, our show last week. "Mike, sorry to hear that your 2016 has sucked so bad. Here's to 2017. Hopefully you'll be 100 times better." Dude, it could only get better. Come on. Really, 2016?
Well, you just said it could only get worse.
I said about deaths, yes, but other things. Personal other things.
Let's hope for the best.
Exactly.
Yeah. Always.
Okay,
sure things with politics will be just fine next year.
Oh yeah,
Jennifer. Jennifer.
We keep this politically free. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be huge. We'll talk later, darling. It'll be awesome.
It's gonna be tiny.
Oh wow, tiny hands. Oh, I went there. Sorry. Okay, sorry, Jay. Back to your letter. Here are some quick thoughts on the movie. He said, "I like the crawl being scrapped. I didn't feel like it needed the crawl for this one." He said he really liked the beginning, though the skirmish, though the middle was meh, but he loved the entire third act. There's a lack of character development, but it's a plot-driven film. The literary started with the Permies and then filled the characters to accomplish it. I was totally fine with that. They loved the different characters of Chirrut, Baze, and Saw and crew, like Bondi and K2SO, Mei Onjin and Cassian. They're fine. They loved the fact, you know, Jade loved the fact that they all died. I think we all agreed. I think we all agreed on that last week. Totally agreed. The love story never materializing was a good thing. Loved the visual design on the entire film. And this is Mike Gordon. Mike, I understand why you'd prefer a more standard Star Wars film, but this is exactly my kind of film. I love the dark and gritty nature of it. I like the tragedies are becoming a bigger part of the creative sphere. They've been gone for too long, but I also think the ending does remind us there's always hope. His rating was a 9.85 out of 10, or a 4.925 on the ESO scale. Thanks for the great podcast, Jay Shearer. Thank you, Jay. We appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Jay.
All right. That's going to wrap it up. And, you know, like I said, I'll torture your emails if you write us on the air. And I'll kill it when I try to read it on the air. So it'll be perfect.
So please send audio.
Exactly. Oh, shut up. Well, I might as well thank everyone for being here this week. Mr. Mike Gordon, thank you, sir.
As always, it's my pleasure, although I wish it was under better circumstances this week.
Yeah, we did get to talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, though.
We did. And that was a highlight. And I do want to take an opportunity to plug a good friend of the show. Van Allen Plexico has got a graphic novel that he is trying to get made called Cold Lightning. It's part of his Legion saga, and there will be a link to it on our show notes as well as on his website and on Facebook. I definitely think that people should check it out and help make it happen. Through all the writing that Van's done, he's actually never had a graphic novel done of any of his stories. So this is pretty and he's a big comic fan, too. So this is pretty exciting for him. I want to help him make it happen. So let's all go there and check it out and please support it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Jennifer, thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
Yep. No problem. And anything you want to shout out about?
Of course, I always want to encourage people to come check out Earth Station MCU, your home for everything about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You can hear me run my mouth about any number of things, including issues of women superheroes in movies.
There you go. How it can't beat that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And of course, you know, you could be found on Earth Station Who on top of that.
Indeed. Yes, I can.
And we just had coming out yesterday was our, you know, Doctor Who Christmas special episode. A brand new Doctor Who story.
It was awesome.
Yes, I watched it for the second time already today. So it was like, yep, yay. I can keep on watching this one. All right. And of course, Darren.
Hi, everybody.
No, thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you. That too.
Anything yes, you want to shout out about?
Two things. There's a new comic out, Love is Love, which is all the proceeds for it go to the victims and the families of the victims of the Pulse shooting in Orlando. Mm-hmm. And that should be at your comic shops now and available online to order. It's put out by IDW. So go out and get that. And the other thing, we were supposed to record about John Waters tonight, so you have time to bone up on your John Waters filmography for the next time.
Very much so. Very much so.
And the podcast. Right. Well, of course, your podcast. And also that we'll be starting up the Dragon Con report pretty soon.
Oh, Lordy, yes. I was shopping for fabrics today.
It's awesome. Right around the corner, folks. Dragon Con will be here before you know
it. I'm already behind. Stop it. Let's move on.
And you hear all kinds of fun stuff like that on the Dragon Con report starting at the end of January. Oh, boy. All right. And James, you made it through your first episode with us.
Yes, came for John Waters, but, you know, just shifted and moving with the tragedy. So,
I'm glad to be here. Cool. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for Dacoma Sanchez for listening to me for hours on end talk about geek stuff. And I guess she knew I needed to put it somewhere.
No. So we have Dacoma to blame for you. Got it. No, that makes sense.
Yes, yes.
Anything you want to else promote? Because I remember you, I heard you might have a Photoshop show coming up.
Oh, well, I am an art photographer, and it's not total public yet, but I got a show called Small Secret Things. It's going to be at the Snake Nation Gallery in Atlanta, Castleberry Hill, downtown. And it's going to be in May 12th, and looking forward to it. This is going to be a little bit more of a moodier and somber show, trying to keep all the nerd and geek stuff out of it. So I'm trying to make it a little bit more black and white, moody, and so forth. So working on that right now, so I'm very excited about it.
That is awesome, sir. And we'll post more information about it once it gets closer.
Will do, and Dacoma is actually going to be in the show as one of the models, yes.
That is awesome. Fantastic, sir, and great to have you on the show this week. So, my shout-out real quick. Mike Gordon actually talked a few weeks back about the new Disney film, Moana, and it was awesome. I went to go see it today with my nephew.
Nice.
And, wow. It blew me away. I wasn't anything what I was expecting. It was fun. The adventure was good. The story was very empowering. And you got to hear The Rock sing.
Mm-hmm.
and really sing. He's not bad.
No, he is not bad.
Black Adam sings? What?
Exactly. Yes, that's right. And he's not just talking about jabronis out there. So it was actually a lot of fun to hear, you know, him talk about his character. His character at points was very rock-like, egotistical and such, but it was actually a lot of fun. And it's something for the whole family, and definitely recommend it. And it's definitely going to be added to my Disney collection because I don't have a ton of the princess movies, but I think this one fits in there really well with my collection, and I'm looking forward to owning it.
Well, as he says in the movie, Mike, you're welcome.
Exactly. Thank you, Mr. Mike, for doing that. But with that being said, that's going to wrap it up for this week. And we are going next week going to put that damn year 2016 into the geek seat. We're going to torture it. We really are. And, you know, we're going to...
And hopefully it will die.
Well, other things have died in the geek seat, you know, including some of our careers here on the show. But... it's going to be a lot of fun, and we're going to treat it with no respect at all. So it should be a lot of interesting things to come out of it. And we got a great crew already lined up. So until then, my name is Mike Faber, and we will see you here next time on the Earth Station One podcast. Talk to you all soon. Peace.
You've been listening to Earth Station One, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESO Amazon.com eStore, where right from our website you can find all kind of geeky goodness. And if you get something up there, you also help support the station. ESO also has a Zazzle store to buy cool ESO merchandise and such. Show your ESO love with something from Zazzle. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace.
It's good to see you, sweetheart.
You contemptible pig. I remain celibate for you. I stood at the back of a cathedral, waiting in celibacy for you, with 300 friends and relatives in attendance. My uncle hired the best Romanian caterers in the state. To obtain the 7 limousines for the wedding party, my father used up his last favors with Mad Pete Trollope. So for me, for my mother, my grandmother, my father, my uncle, and for the common good, I must now kill you and your brother.
Please don't kill us. You know I'd love you, baby. I wouldn't leave you. It wasn't my fault.
You miserable slug. You think you can talk your way out of this? You betrayed me.
No, I didn't. Honest. I ran out of gas. I had a flat tire. I didn't have enough money for cab fare. My tux didn't come back from the cleaners. An old friend came in from out of town. Someone stole my car. There was an earthquake. A terrible flood. Locust. It wasn't my fault, I swear to God!
Oh, Jake. Jake, honey.
Let's go. Take it easy.
So what I believe you were trying to say is thank you.
Thank you?
You're welcome.
What? No, no, no. I didn't. I wasn't. Why would I ever say
okay, that? Okay. I mean, I see what's happening, yeah. You're face to face with greatness and it's strange. You don't even know how you feel. It's adorable. Well, it's nice to see that humans never change. Open your eyes, let's begin. Yes, it's really me, it's Maui, breathe it in. I know it's a lot, the hair, the bod. When you're staring at a demigod, what can I say except you're welcome? For the tides, the sun, the sky. Hey, it's okay, you're welcome. I'm just an ordinary demi-guy. Hey, what has two thumbs and pulled up the sky? When you were waddling yay high, this guy. When the nights got cold, who stole you fire from down below? Look at Adam, yo. Oh, also I lassoed the sun. You're welcome to stretch your days and bring you fun. Also, I harness the breeze. You're welcome to fill your sails and shake your trees. So what can I say except you're welcome? For the islands I pull from the sea. There's no need to pray, it's okay. You're welcome. Ha! I guess it's just my way of being me. You're welcome. You're welcome.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.